Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am so happy to welcome today an author whose books I admire so much. It is just a thrill to when I got this book, Babylon, a novel of Jewish captivity. So I'm so happy to welcome Michelle Cameron to Joy on Paper. Hi, Michelle. Can you hear me?
Yes, Michelle? Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Okay.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here today.
Well, as you know, this book came out in September, and you know this year has gone so 2023 was such a strange year. It just finished suddenly, and I wasn't able to have you on earlier. But this is really, it's so exciting that you know this comes at just I think at a time when people are very curious, and this story of a novel of Jewish captivity in Babylon, I think it's very relevant for today.
It definitely is, and let me tell you, I actually wrote this book about 10 years ago. I had no intention of it being nearly as timely as it has been. But you're right. It is definitely relevant to what is happening today.
Because I think this would have been perhaps a different interview if I know it was released in September and then everything went crazy starting in October. So now we've had some time. I think people have had some time to sit back, wonder what is going on, and interested more in the history. I think this is one of the things that, you know, the news cycle is so fast and everything moves so quickly, and they really don't go into depth about the history. And people are, I think that's why there's so much misinformation out there. And that's one of the things that I worry about, that people don't understand the history. And this story, you have really brought to life the events of that period. So I want you to explain, you know, this is a multi-generational biblical saga, but yes, it is also a very important story and a love story in many ways. A lot of things that people will understand better once they read this book. So tell us about Babylon, and then we'll go back and talk about how you came out with the idea and the process, okay?
Absolutely. So Babylon is about the Babylonian exile when King Nebuchadnezzar's troops razed the city of Jerusalem, burned the temple, and took the most influential and affluent people into exile in Babylon. And they were there for about 70 years, so really three generations of people lived in Babylon, could not leave. It is also the story of Nebuchadnezzar's royal family, particularly three of his children who were vying for the throne and fighting against one another. And it is also about the biblical prophets, including the prophet Daniel, who helped the Judeans be able to preserve their faith while they were away from their temple, away from sacrifice, as well as other prophets, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, and especially at the end of the book, Ezra.
Now, you paint the picture here so clearly. You obviously have done a great deal of research, but you bring the story to life. It's wonderful when you're writing about a historical period of time that people don't know much about, when the author can take you back there. And I'm thinking particularly of right from the beginning, that I think it was the second chapter, where you really take us there into the throne room. And tell us about this. Tell us about, people have heard the name Nebuchadnezzar. Many people don't know the full story. So take us there to that throne room and tell us about about what was going on and the massive wealth of that period.
Yes, no, Babylon is definitely the center of the world at this period. Nebuchadnezzar II was its ruler. His armies basically conquered a great deal of the known world. As a result, you know, the treasure that piled up in Babylon, the wealth that they had, was staggering. And particularly for people from Judea, from Jerusalem, the comparisons between Jerusalem and Babylon were really quite unbelievable. So taking you back into the throne room, you know, the book of Daniel is a lot about Daniel being able to interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dreams. So I basically keyed off of that and had his Nebuchadnezzar's three children pretend to dream something that all showed that they were the ones that were going to take over the throne when their father died. And poor Daniel has to come in, bow before the king, and hear these various dreams, and somehow thread through them, be able to recount them to the king in a way that he would not feel threatened by his children, but that, in fact, that they would all sort of end up coming true within the scope of the novel. So, I love the research, and you talked about the fact that a lot of people don't know about this history. That, in fact, for me is kind of my sweet spot, is in relating Jewish history that people, non-Jews and Jews alike, don't know a lot about. So that's kind of where I focus my novels.
Well, of course, you're an award-winning author for many of your books, and I want particularly to mention one of the ones that I enjoy so much is Beyond the Ghetto Gates, because I'm sort of a Napoleon Bonaparte expert. I have, I think, 200 books about Napoleon.
Oh, wow.
And so I was so thrilled when that book came out, because that, of course, is about how Napoleon freed the Jews from their ghettos. And so that book, of course, I think won first place, right? Won the Goethe Prize?
It won a couple of awards. The one I think I'm proudest of was the silver medal from the Independent Publishers Association, the IPPI Awards.
Well, so, obviously, you know your Jewish history, and you make it really come alive. And now in this book, of course, one of the things I have to mention, that, which really thrilled me, that one of the blurbs that you got, which all of the blurbs you got were impressive, but one, of course, was from Margaret George, who wrote about it, and she's been a frequent guest on Joy on Paper and a good friend. And when she wrote insightful, colorful, and fascinating, I knew that we had a winner.
Yes. No, it's funny, because of all of the blurbs that I received, Margaret George's was the one that floored my husband. He's a huge fan of hers. And he's like, how is it possible that Margaret George actually endorsed your book? So I agree. That was a really proud moment when I got that blurb.
Well, because she knows her history, and she knows that period of time, too, because of her work on Julius Caesar and Cleopatra and all of the research that she did into that period. So, you know, it is a great honor to have a blurb from Margaret George. Now, let's talk about it, but this is also, it's not just a story about sort of the big picture, the freeing, or the Jews, you know, eventually getting back after their exile in Babylon, but it's also a love story, which you framed to make it something that people can really relate to, a family. So let's go back to that first chapter where we find ourselves in Jerusalem.
Yes. So, and it's interesting with the current crisis. So many of my readers have said that they really were able to better understand the crisis of October the 7th based on that first chapter. And as I said earlier, that was never intentional, but of course, it's definitely there. Sarah, who is really the protagonist of much of the novel, is taken from her farm after her father literally kills her mother in order that they not be captured, but then himself is killed. And she and a cousin of hers are carried off, see the temple burning, and really this starts Sarah's enormous longing, which is to return home to the farm that she and her family have lived on for her entire life. But she then, along the journey, meets a musician, Seraph, and the two of them fall in love, but are separated by the fact that they're both made slaves in the palace. And so there's definitely huge amounts of longing in this book, longing for one another, longing for the return home.
And as it is relevant, it is pretty horrific. And I think that people reading this will, with current events, will realize that, you know, when you read it and it's set way back in time, it's horrific. But now that we can relate it to current events, it is doubly horrific. And so I think that people reading this book will say, we need to understand this. We need to understand this longing that Sarah has, that the other Jews have, to get back to Israel. And it is so touching, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, you were talking a little bit about the misinformation that is out there. And I think the connection of the Jews to the land definitely goes back even further than this period, but has been perpetual throughout our history. And, you know, I think the novel definitely captures that connection.
Oh, it does, because with the disinformation out there and so much misinformation on the whole in the younger generation who don't understand, and when they think that it's a matter of that just right after World War II, Jews decided to grab Israel like out of this clear blue sky, that they never had any connection to it. It really is, I think, important that people read this, and even Jews who understand it, who have known, I think this gives them a solid background that they need. And with all of the biblical references and all of the connections that are proven, that are known.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you know, context has become a really bad word lately, but it definitely gives them that biblical context and that historic context.
Now, of course, as a historian, as a Jewish historian, this was a subject that was right there for you all the time, I'm sure, since you were very young, as I've known about this story. And Daniel was a particular favorite of mine, somebody I enjoyed reading about. So as you said, you started this book 10 years ago. How did it come to you to sit down and write this book?
So it actually came to me, it's actually probably closer to 15 years ago. It came to me after while I was writing my first novel, which was about a medieval rabbi ancestor of mine called The Fruit of Her Hands. In that novel, basically what happened is the French authorities decided to burn some 24 cartloads of volumes of Talmud in the Paris Market Square. And so in that novel, the rabbi's wife, Shira, watches the carts rumble past her and somehow pops into her mind, as I'm writing, it pops into my mind, that she recalled Psalm 137 by the waters of Babylon. And that led her to think about how the Jews, throughout their millennia of exile, have always managed to thrive despite the exile. Something in me just sort of clicked. And I said, I really want to go back and look at that psalm, which obviously I had to do to put in the novel. But I also want to, I love the idea of this longing to go back. And the fact that we were able to really sort of remake our faith, remake our religion while we were in exile in Babylon. That was really the start of what the religion turned into. And so I just, whenever I'm intrigued by a subject, I start researching. And that was how I began work on that, on Babylon.
And, when you mentioned about the burning of the books, and we are such people of books, book lovers. It's so difficult for us to understand this, and it's gone through history where they have taken our books, and particularly where they have taken the Talmud and the Torah, and they burn it, but it's lived on in the voices, how we carry this through all of these years.
Yes. No, when I started to write, I never knew that I would be focusing on that kind of horrors. And I'll tell you, I wrote about the burning of the Talmud with tears streaming down my cheeks. But all of my books are eventually about the fact that we have survived. We have gotten through, from the biblical age, medieval, to the Napoleonic age. We've managed to survive despite everything done to us. And I think that's probably one of the most important messages from my novel.
It is. And I as somebody who studies British history, just recently I came upon a story of the expulsion of Jews from Bury St. Edmunds. And again, so ridiculous, burning their books, chasing them out of town for no reason, really being scapegoated for other people's evils. And it's so hard sometimes to understand. But I hope that what this book does, I think one of the things that the people who read it, whether they're Jews or whether they're Christians or any other religion or non-religion, that they will really learn a great deal that they need to know.
Yes, no, and I was very, very cognizant of the fact that I was writing this book not just for people who believed, but in fact also for people who are more interested in the culture, in the time period, all of that. And that, in fact, was one of my challenges when it came to write in the biblical passages. You know, the book of Daniel is full of miracles. And so among the things that I've had to do is think of how to put the miracles in and yet still leave room for doubt that they actually happened. So, for example, when I relate the story of Daniel in the lion's den, it ended up being someone's dream. So that the reader of faith could say, absolutely, that will end up happening, just as it's written, and the more skeptical reader will say, oh, okay, someone wrote down this woman's dream. So, you know, it was an interesting challenge to address readers.
You've done it brilliantly. I think the writing is excellent, and the way that you handle the subject is beautifully drawn. I wish I had more time to talk to you about all your other books, but I'm going to have you back, that's for sure, because I do have to talk to you about all your other books, and particularly about Napoleon, because that, as I said, that's one of my big interests. But I want to tell everyone that the name of the book is Babylon, A Novel of Jewish Captivity. It's by Michelle Cameron. And your website is what?
It is michelle-cameron.com.
Yeah, Michelle-Cameron. Well, people, you can go there, and it's available, of course, online. She also has a blog. She has more about her books, about her writing instructions. I understand that you also teach writing. And as a freelance writer, you also have a lot of more information that people can discover. And you're just a brilliant writer. And I'm so happy that you were on today. And, of course, I also saw that you love poetry. So I always ask people who love poetry, what's their favorite sonnet? So do you have a favorite sonnet?
That is almost impossible. I think I will go with one of the more conventional, Let Me Not to the Marriage of True Minds. I forget what number that is, but I absolutely adore so many of Shakespeare's sonnets, so many of Spencer's sonnets. I was an English literature student, so absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll have you back on again, and we'll be able to talk about sonnets, and we'll be able to talk about Napoleon and a lot of other things, because it will be one of the joys of my life is to really encourage people to read. And I think one of the things that I have discovered is that if people are starting to write and they want to learn how to write, turning to poetry is always a great way to learn to appreciate words, and you obviously have done that with your writing.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, my favorite sonnet is number 29, and we'll talk about that, and I think yours is up in the big numbers, somewhere in the hundreds. I can't remember that number either, but again, Let Me Not to the Marriage of True Minds is an excellent choice. So again, thank you so much, Michelle Cameron, for being on Joy on Paper today, and I'm going to have you back, okay?
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, and everybody, get this book. It's called Babylon, A Novel of Jewish Captivity. It's fascinating. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, wow. That went too fast. She has so much to talk about. We're going to play a book buzz. This is a book buzz. This, I think, is the third book buzz. It's number three, Devon Miller. We'll see if we can get that up because I just wanted to talk about it. It was one of his first book buzzes. And I just, you know, I've been so fortunate to have discovered three wonderful contributors to Joy on Paper. first of all, of course, came Rita Moreau, who tells us all about the mysteries we should not miss. And then Bria Burton, who does sci-fi. And she also has been a guest host now several times. And she's going to be a guest host again in February 27th. She's going to take over the program again. She loves to take over the program. And she's going to have two new guests and to bring us some really fascinating sci-fi books. Now, I don't know if Big Ed managed to find number 3 of Devon Miller's. And we'll play it if we have it. And if we don't, we'll go to commercials. But I just want to say, again, special thanks to Michelle Cameron, because her book is fantastic. And I don't know. I'm waiting for Big Ed to take over. If he takes over with number 3, then we will have that. If not, let's go to commercials.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Club children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. The book I'm talking about is R.E.J.'s Kinky Curly Crown, written by Ayeen Haith-Drew and illustrated by Shamar Knight Justice. Having been an educator for nearly over a decade, Ayeen saw how much of an impact literature had on her children while she was in the classroom. Knowing Shamar from a school they both worked at, she picked Shamar to do her illustrations for R.E.J., making this book his debut as a children's illustrator and Ayeen's debut as a children's author. Based on Ayeen's niece of the same name, the book tells the story of first grader R.E.J. She had the perfect clothes, glasses, grades, friends, and even teacher. But the only thing not so perfect she noticed was her wild, unruly hair. When reading R.E.J.'s Kinky Curly Crown, you'll see beautifully illustrated characters in the book, all with different hairstyles along the way, and the book serves as a great reminder to embrace what makes you special. I remember my hair was becoming a little wild and curly than it should have been during quarantine, but let me tell you guys that a haircut for me was a trick to embracing my true hairstyle. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at RedCross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper, and I am so thrilled. I have, oh my goodness, this is one of my favorite books ever. And I am so happy to welcome Melody Kelly to Joy on Paper because she's written a book that, my goodness, it's like it was written for me. It's called Lulu at the Louvre. Hi, Melody.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, wow. Oh, you wrote this book? Oh, I just like, I love
this book. Oh, well, thank you so much.
I love it. Oh, it's so wonderful. I'm hugging it right now. I'm actually physically hugging this book to me. It is.
I'm so happy to hear that. I have to tell you that when I first saw it, I hugged it too.
Well, it's just like, it needs to be hugged. I tell you, this is book. It gave me so much pleasure. It gave much joy. Because it's like if I was going to tell somebody, write a book for me, it would be this book. Because it has everything I love. It has, of course, the connection with Paris, and we have the Louvre. And then, of course, it's... Lulu comes from England, and yes. Where I moved to when I was 21 years old. So I love England, and she's a perfect mouse.
Oh, well, I also lived in England about 20 years ago. And so where Lulu is from, the village of Islam, is where I live.
Well, I'm glad. And I know Islam very well. I know it very well. Because I spent a lot of time in Bury St. Edmunds.
Oh, yes.
And the RAF Rougham at the air base.
Okay. Yes.
So I've been to your little town many times. probably a pub there. My husband and I traveled around England, and I could get him to take me anywhere for a romantic weekend, anywhere, if I said, there's an RAF base there. So I spent a lot of romantic weekends in your neighborhood.
Well, that's just lovely. It's one of my very favorite places ever. We still have lots of dear friends there. So it made sense to me that should be where Lulu was from.
Well, it's perfect. It is perfect. And you know there is a Mouse Lane in Rougham.
Oh, no, I did not.
Oh, I thought that's why you named it. Thought that's why you had a mouse. There is a street called Mouse Lane.
Oh, that's excellent. I love that.
So no, when you go back there, you have to take a photo of it or get some friends to go to Mouse Lane.
Absolutely. I absolutely will. So Lulu herself. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, what's the odds? Fantastic.
No, I was just going to say Lulu is a mouse simply because she's the mouse I saw at the Louvre on a vacation many, many years ago. So I just decided to combine two things I loved, being at the Louvre and being in England, and then also having lived in England.
Well, so tell us the trip to the Louvre. You know, it's so much fun. When I lived in England, we spent like every other weekend in Paris or around Paris. So, and unlike, you know, just a tourist, we spent so many hours in the Louvre. Now, I wasn't lucky enough to see a mouse.
Well, I will tell you how I was lucky enough to see a mouse is I was traveling with my family, and my youngest son was very young, maybe 3 years old. And I was looking down on the ground because I was paying attention to what he was doing. I was checking on him. And that's how I spotted the mouse, because my eyes for a moment weren't on the art, but they were on him. And so I saw the little mouse dart out from a hole in the wall and do the entire mouse bit where they hurry and scurry and zig and zag. and he disappeared into a hole in the other side of the wall. And for the rest of that trip to the Louvre, I was just distracted by thinking about how wonderful it would be to be a mouse who could look at all that wonderful art. And I concocted this story from that experience.
Well, it was fate. It was fate. It was meant to be. You know, in Yiddish we say beshert. It was meant to be. That is now taking you on a career. I believe that you have so many Lulu books in you as a result of that.
Oh, I would love it. I hope so. It is actually the first of what I hope to be a series called the Lulu Mysteries. So yes, I have many Lulu stories to tell.
And with the Louvre being in the news recently, because some idiots actually threw paint at the Mona Lisa. I mean, how stupid they are. It's mind-boggling. But at least people now, for anybody who doesn't know the Louvre, they know now about it. And now they can read Lulu, and I think we're going to have lots of adventures.
Absolutely. And yes, I thought the same thing about the poor Mona Lisa this week. I think Lulu would be shocked.
Well, I'm. You may use it. I mean, what you've captured here, I think it's so delightful. So tell us a story about how you came out with the idea, you know, with the premise of how she gets to the Louvre. And I think we're going to have a lot of the wonderful thing. Now, of course, I have to mention that you were a grade school teacher, right? Grade school. What was your favorite? What class did you like? What age?
I started out teaching middle school and then was moved to second grade. And second grade is where I stayed for many, many years. And I absolutely adore second graders. So my favorite part of teaching and the part that was my specialty was reading and teaching reading and finding wonderful books for kids and reading to them. And I am such a huge fan of good children's literature. And I spent so many years reading to kids that when I saw that mouse and started this journey of bringing Lulu to life, I was thinking about all those second graders and the things that capture children's imaginations and make them want to read and pull them into a story. And so that's kind of how she came to be.
Well, as I said, she is just so delightful, and you've really captured the fun that a child needs in a book that can be read aloud to them. You know, this book is fine for your middle grade kids, but also it is a perfect book for people to read to their kids because there's so much you can do with it.
Yes, I've gotten to do a couple of story times so far where I've gotten to read it and interact with parents and children. And that's what they tell me, that they've enjoyed reading it, sharing it as a family. And I love hearing that.
Well, just tell us, how does she land up in Paris?
So, she's taken a nap in the attic of the house where she lives, and she has a favorite trunk that she crawls into through a hole, and she snuggles down in a quilt. And in that trunk, underneath that quilt, is a painting. And she can only see one tiny part of it, and she loves it. But every day she takes a nap in that quilt, and one afternoon she is startled awake while she's napping, and when she looks out the hole, she realizes that her trunk is moving. And so some thieves have come and stolen it and are taking it out of the house. And as she's trying to figure out a way to get out of the trunk, she hits her head, and when she wakes up next, she's at the Louvre.
Oh, wow. Oh. I love it. I got such a kick out of it. I think what I discovered is, as I'm reading it, Yeah, I'm reading it out loud to myself. I just had so much fun with it. And when I get really excited about a book and I start reading it out loud to myself, I know I've got a winner.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love hearing that. It combines some of my favorite things from my own childhood and stories I loved, which was Tiny Things. I loved the idea of Lulu having this experience where she's living with dollhouse furniture and getting to eat her dinner off of a button or drink out of a toothpaste cap. And those were some things I loved in stories. And I loved the adventure, and I loved the mystery. I really loved mysteries as a child. So I sort of gave her all the things that I used to enjoy when I was reading.
And you've combined them in an really, it is delightful, delightful story. And
thank you.
The character is delightful, and the and the bad guys. I have some ideas for them. I think it's so wonderful. I'm sure you're working on the next one. You cannot stop this.
No, I am. In fact, I'm hoping book two should, people can look for book two to come out later this year. And I have so many stories for places that Lulu can go and discover and solve some more mysteries.
Oh, it's wonderful. I think when something like this comes to an author, when something that, you know, an event happened in their life and then it comes to fruition at some point. Now, of course, all in the between years, your son who distracted you must be a little bit older now.
He's actually all grown up now. So, yes, it's been a long number of years to get from when the story first happened in my mind to today, for sure.
Well, now you're on a roll, and now that you've retired from, you're not teaching in school anymore, right?
I am not. I get the great opportunity now to just write and to focus on that, and it is so wonderful. I love teaching. And I miss it, but I really, really feel like I'm doing the right thing right now.
Well, I think you're on a roll because now you get to combine your love for reading, writing, and children, because you'll
Absolutely.
Be able to go around to schools. You'll be able to, the more books you have, the more opportunities you'll have to go out there and really, you know, be with the children and see those excited faces, because when you do read to children, and I know that when I was teaching Sunday school, that was my favorite moment of the day, when I would read a book and you look at, and it is, you're right, first and second graders, they are the best to read to, because they believe. They believe.
Yes.
They get so excited and they believe. When they start getting in third grade, they're a little bit, a little more, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to get that excited. But but you have the best of everything now. I think this is going to be so much fun. And at the same time, you're teaching something. You're, you know, without them understanding that, they're learning about the Louvre and they're learning about Paris and they're learning about it just comes naturally.
I hope so. I have to say that it does combine all my favorite things. And I'm like you. I love reading. I loved reading to children. Love to do it today. And that moment when a story resonates with them and their eyes light up is magic.
Well, I was raised on from the time I was, well, born. My mother was reading to us. Of course, we were poor, so a lot of the time it was comic books or those golden books, you know, inexpensive. They were inexpensive. So she read everything to us, which is why, you know, we just started reading. And I hope that with this new book, and with this new, really, it's going to be a series that you can get out there and read to kids, because they need to hear they need to hear those words. They need to hear voices. I don't know what's happening to kids today when they tell us that kids are graduating high school without being able to read.
Absolutely. When I was a little girl, I have such fond memories of my mom reading to me. She read me the Little House on the Little House books by Laura Ingalls Wilder and so many other books. And I watched my parents read. I was checking out books at the library, big stacks, probably taller than I was, but as soon as I could. And I think that reading is such a huge part of our development. And I think that stories are important, and I can't imagine a world without books for myself. So,
it is so important. It really is. It breaks my heart when I hear about kids who are in 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, graduating from high school, and they still can't read.
Absolutely. And I also think that it's so important. One of the goals I had when I was teaching was to do more than teach reading as a subject, but to make it something a child wanted to do their whole life long, to sort of open up a whole other world for them with books, so that they wanted to read for pleasure as much as they wanted to read to learn. Because I think that reading does so much for us. You know, stories take us to places maybe we can't go. They let us see parts of the world and ways of living and ways of being that we may never experience. And I just think it's so important.
Well, I just hope there are more teachers out there like you, teachers who want to share this joy of reading, and that they get these books in their classroom and that they read to kids, because it changes your life. When you are become a reader.
Absolutely.
So, and you have such a perfect name for a writer, Melody Kelly. I mean, it's just perfect.
Oh, well, thank you.
I mean, if you're going to be a writer for kids' books, to have the name Melody, I think, like, it was, again, it was meant to be. This was meant to be.
I feel that, and I appreciate you saying that.
And I'm actually, you know, sometimes I get sometimes very, I don't know, cuckoo about talking to teachers, because I had a third grade teacher. Now I was reading, as I said, my mother was reading to us from the time we were born. And I by the time I was five, I was reading her Perry Mason paperback books.
Wow.
So when I got to third grade, I had a third grade teacher who called me dumb.
Oh.
Yeah. And I always thought after that, you know, I wish teachers would understand how very, very important every word they say to a kid is.
Absolutely. And I think good ones do, because I remember thinking that when I was teaching. One of the things I always said when I was teaching to parents when I met them was, I want to speak to your children the way I hope someone is speaking to mine. And I think that kids do absorb all those messages and all those words. So it is so important how we speak to them. Absolutely.
And to be encouraging as you are in this book, just encouraging Lulu to solve a mystery. I thought that's so much fun. It is an absolutely delightful book. And if you have another book coming out this year, you're going to come back here, because I want to talk about it, and I want to really highlight I'm going to be doing a special summer reading camp for kids this year, and encouraging parents to, and all family members, big brothers, because my big sister would read to me, you know, as I got a little older, but she would spend hours reading to me. And it makes a difference. So it doesn't have to be a mom, a pop. It can be your, you know, a good friend, a family friend, a grandparent, a sister, a brother. to read to kids, to get them to get the open up their imagination and have them, as you said, go into another world and imagine what they can be and what they can become.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's wonderful.
Okay. So you have, do you have a website, or how do people find you?
People can find me on Facebook as Melody Kelly Author, or on Instagram as Melody Kelly Write.
Okay. Well, Melody Kelly. I love it. If I was making up a name, I would do that. And then if I was making up a storyline, I would do Lulu, because we want a nice a British mouse.
Just perfect.
So again, I want to thank you, you know, so much for being on Joy on Paper. You are a joy, and I know that you're bringing a lot of joy to kids with this book and with all the books. I envision something like 30 or 40 books in this series.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so very much. Thank you so much for your kind words.
And because, as you said, with combining, you can introduce art and history and geography all at once and just make kids' eyes, how a kid's eyes get big when they get excited. I love that feeling.
Yes, me too. Yes, absolutely. Okay. She can go on many adventures.
And I look forward to all of them. Melody Kelly, thank you for being on Joy on Paper today. You are
a
joy.
Thank you for having me. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. I love this book. Now, you know, I'm telling you, it's a kid's book. Oh, my goodness. If you have some extra money, send this to a children's hospital, St. Jude's or Shriners. The kids will love it. I mean, I'm going to send 10 of them to a hospital just because the kids will love these books. So this is the kind of thing that you can do. Be kind and be thoughtful. And I will say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room because he managed to control me today. I get a little confused. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I understand the people up north are going to be freezing again, and my brother's
Tuesday.
Happy. Oh, is today Tuesday?
It sure is all day.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's because the Lions, the Lions lost. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to even say it. Yes. Anyway. I will be back on Thursday. Oh, I have a great, really great program, too. Okay, bye-bye now.